Yorkshire. Oh, but when we got it home, it grew up into something we could no longer contain.
Welcome back to the 2 Mutts podcast. This is season 4, the kickoff, episode 60. I'm your host, Joshua Marshall. I'm with Brody McIntyre. Brody, how's it going?
Going great, boss. Cool. How about yourself?
Yeah, can't complain. Can't complain at all. How was your New Year's?
Christmas? New Year's was about as expected. Sat in my house. Didn't do much. Hung out with the kids. Played some games. Went for a late night dog walk with everybody, got some fresh air, and then we made it to about 12:30 and then lights out.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, no, same, just low key. I'm single. I got my own place. So my two people are my parents, so I can go see them. So I spent Christmas Day with them, and then that was about it. Just been pretty much taking it easy at home and not doing too much. But yeah, we got a great podcast today to start off season 4. We got Darren Dreger. Thoughts on that, Brody? We got Bob Stauffer coming on too, so we got the double whammy with two big guests here.
Both a couple of my favorites in the business, right? Both are very well known. Start with Darren Dreger. Wow, I'm a little nervous, I'm not gonna lie. A little nervous. I'm probably be mumbling away and be a little sweaty, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, exactly. You're slowly becoming a professional. So if everyone's wondering where our other kind of counterparts are, they're still on their holidays. So Clay Vanderham and Trevor Ruptash, they're still dealing with their holiday break here. So unfortunately they weren't able to make probably the biggest podcast that we have, but understand that family commitments and enjoying some time with them is a priority. But so, Broads, quick thoughts on the World Junior so far, and what's your thoughts on the tournament and how things have shaped out so far?
About as expected, excluding the Finland victory over Sweden. Every year, you know, there's a few blowouts. People start bitching and moaning, complaining that they should only have six teams, whatever it is, and just the way it is. There's teams that they dream about being there, right? So, like Germany, people, oh, they should only have six teams. Don't tell me Germany is not flying home right now going, man, that was the best experience of my life. Don't tell me that's not great for German hockey, because I don't buy it for 1 second. And it's really annoying when people start tweeting that out and talking about that, because it's an unbelievable experience for every single guy who's there, regardless wins or losses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's a game changer for them in their development. And that's what this whole tournament's about, is your development as a professional and as you're coming up to be a professional. Obviously they're not being paid, but some of these guys are playing in pro leagues around the world. So, you know, like obviously some of the Canadian guys and some of the American guys are probably different, but the European kids, they're playing in some pro leagues overseas. And, you know, this is going to be much better for them. The fact that they can talk 10 years down the road that I was in the corner with Dylan Cousins, who's going to be a stud, and you know, Philip Roberg, who's going to be a stud, and you know, like just Stutzel. And I know that you really like Ilyash as a tournament just kept on. Quick thoughts on him as a player. I wonder if someone was going to sign him or if he'll go back in the draft kind of part, but that'll be interesting to watch. His,
is he 19?
He's 18 right now. So,
okay. So he can go back in.
Yeah, he can go back in. So I'm wondering if I should know this, but I don't know if maybe age wise he wasn't eligible for this draft. I thought maybe that was the case, but he is 18.
I bet you he's signing a contract on his way home.
I would hope so.
Two-way deal somewhere. Like, he's good enough to play for sure. I mean, I'm not saying NHL, but maybe one day he can be. But he was fantastic.
Yeah, like if you're looking to stock up some prospects in your system, why wouldn't you look at that kid if you can sign him for nothing, right?
And
if he goes back, in the draft, it would be interesting to see where he goes. But I, you know, at first I was not as sold, but you sold me on it, Broads. I thought he was a standout for sure. And he drove.
Well, I don't think I sold you on it. I told you about him, but he did all the work. Right? He was the one doing it. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
Out there. I was a big fan of him, and he's playing center, right? Stutzel's on the wing.
Yeah. No, exactly. So, no, it's going to be interesting how some of these turns out here. This tournament's been pretty good in my mind. USA's kind of went on a run here with, and then they kind of got a little bit of a scare last night. But it's definitely kind of in my mind maybe shaping up to a Canada-USA final. So we'll see how that goes tomorrow. Yeah. But
I get to watch Zegras play again. Cool.
He's
special.
Yeah, he is definitely going to push for some top minutes with the Ducks. And it'll be interesting how many of these kids, go to, these NHL training camps when they can and push for some minutes. That's going to be something intriguing to watch. And we kind of touched on that as the podcast goes on here, but, we're talking with Dreger and whatnot, but, and for people that, so Dreger kind of does a good preview. We run down all the Canadian teams, going into interview with him. The moves that they made, where we see them at right now. And then, he had some RFA talk on some of the guys that are not signed yet and some that have signed and where things go there. But that interview was really good. And then Bob Stauffer going to break down everything Oilers, go hard on the Oilers talk with him and talk about some of the development that Brogberg had in this tournament and Dylan Holloway. So we're looking forward to people liking that interview. And we won't ramble on any longer. Let's head to the Darren Dreger interview.
If it's done right the first time, you don't have to redo it. If you get Pete's Concrete to pour your driveway, you don't need a repeat. When your patio is a PDO, you don't need a repeat. When Pete's Concrete fixes your sidewalk, all it takes is once. You don't need a repeat. And if your basement leaks, a Pete's repair helps avoid a repeat. Get it done right the first time with the colors and textures you want so you don't have to redo it. For concrete, you can choose Pete's or repeats. Pete's Concrete.
We'd like to welcome back to the 2 Mutts podcast. He is a TSN hockey insider, and he is the co-host of the Ray and Dregs hockey podcast, Darren Dreger. Dregs, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. All things considered, got through the holidays. A lot of issues here in Ontario, COVID related, obviously. I mean, that's kind of the way it is across the world right now. But one of the customs that, my wife and I, my family have here in Ontario as transplanted Western Canadians, we've always celebrated the Christmas season as just the four of us, my wife and my son and my daughter and I. So to lock down here in Ontario through the Christmas season wasn't that big of a deal. It's kind of what we've been accustomed to for the last 20 plus years. So hoping for better times, but we had a festive and an enjoyable Christmas season.
That's good. That's good to hear. Obviously everyone's doing good. So yeah. I guess we'll kind of jump into, what's the RFA talk? Barzell's not signed. The comments today by Trotz and whatnot, but obviously it's a little bit early on here. That I'm assuming that's probably going to get done soon. But where are things at right there?
Yeah, it'll get done soon. At least that's the expectation. I know that there's been ongoing discussions between the Barzell camp and Lou Lamoriello and the New York Islanders. The tricky part with the Islanders is their salary cap issues, right? I know that there's been lots of discussion throughout this negotiation on what that deal could look like. Could it be a 2-year bridge, a 3-year bridge, a 5-year term, or as much as a 6-year term? And I think the player would prefer a bit of job security and the 6-year term, but I just don't think that they can make the numbers work. So I'd be surprised if it isn't a bridge deal. I'd be surprised if it isn't a 3-year deal. And I'd also be surprised if they don't get it done very, very soon. I know that Matthew Barzell is in the New York area, so he'll be ready to go. He'll be ready to step right into camp as soon as he gets a pen to paper and gets a contract signed, but still some negotiating.
Yeah. Is there a dollar number that you're kind of thinking this might come in around, Dregs?
I mean, it's a good question. I can only speculate. I would look at some of the other top bridge deals that we've seen, in the last couple of years. I feel like up around the Tkachuk bridge, which was what, $7 million?
Yeah.
Or around there. But again, given, you know, the Islanders cap situation, Barzal wants to win. All players want to win. So, you know, he's probably appreciative of the fact that, okay, well, if he leaves a little bit of money on the table, then maybe Lou doesn't have to ship out a player or move a contract that otherwise could help the New York Islanders. So as an educated guess, I'd say he's probably going to be in the sixes, maybe upwards of 6.5 to 7 million on a 3-year term, somewhere around there probably.
Yeah, yeah, he's obviously worth it and a huge part of their team. So it'd be shocking if he's not a part of their team going into to the season. So with him being there, we'll shift gears to Pierre-Luc Dubois. Obviously, he gets done over the weekend there, and your colleague Pierre LeBrun had that, and you guys are been all over that there. Thoughts on the signing and kind of the chatter about the desire of a trade, Dregs?
Well, I think that that's going to be a spot that we watch very closely. You know, players, you know, go through this process where, you know, they're especially a young player coming out of their entry-level deal, you know, where, they, you know, they've got a good taste of what the organization is about, what the coach is like, the direction of the team, all of those things. But, you know, there are only a few times in a player's career where you have leverage. And obviously, Pierre-Luc Dubois didn't feel like he was going to exercise his leverage at this point. A restricted free agent, very good player. He's still developing as a top NHL player. We'll see where that takes him. But I think that both sides are just expanding the feeling out process to just see how things go moving forward. What I know is if Dubois were to hit the market, and it seems likely that he's going to in the foreseeable future, next 2 years here, there will be a strong market for him for sure.
Yeah. What do you take on why players have kind of gone there for a short time but haven't really stayed there, you know, of the Matt Duchene types, the Bobrovskis, the Panarins, and obviously him? What is it about that market that you think, if any, is a problem there?
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem. You know, Columbus is a smaller market from a hockey perspective. And, you know, as a player, you've got to be willing to embrace all of that because it's hard, right? I mean, you look at the major markets, you know, that's why everybody, Panarin included, by the way, who, you know, look at Manhattan, they look at the New York Rangers. Wow, how great would it be to play for the New York Rangers? Or, you know, a team that's in a rebuild, certainly a renovation right now, the Chicago Blackhawks. Chicago of late, you know, has never had problems, you know, luring players. Toronto, I mean, go down the list of all the strong, deep market teams that never seem to have an issue and they're dipping into free agency or in trying to sign players, unless it's a cap reason, they just can't come to terms. So I put Columbus, you know, as a market that is a very good team. And I think Jaromír Kekäläinen's done a very good job. I think that John Tortorella has softened over time. He still has high expectations and is a very demanding and rigid coach at times as well, but he's not what he used to be. So I kind of dismiss that as being a detractor for the young player or for the free agent player that would consider Columbus as being a primary target. For me, it's more about the market. I still look at Columbus as being a very strong team. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of winning too, right? To get things turning there. You look at the Nashville Predators, you know, Nashville built slowly and then got to a place where they were a legit contending team. And, you know, then they kind of went backwards a little bit and they're still very, very strong, but that is not a traditional hockey market by any stretch of the imagination. Yet if you spend any time in Nashville, you quickly appreciate how strong it is from a hockey standpoint. So, you know, sometimes it's just the market, it's the lifestyle, it's everything outside of hockey. The hockey, I don't think would be an issue in Columbus.
Yeah. Do you like the direction that the team is going right now, Dregs, in Columbus?
I do. You know, again, I when Jaromír Kekäläinen went out all in, you mentioned Matt Duchene, you know, didn't stay very long in Columbus, but he was traded there in season and he was a pending unrestricted free agent. But I loved that run by the Columbus Blue Jackets only because Jarmo kind of went all in. You know, he pushed all his chips to the center of the table to say, look, we need to make a run for it. And I'm going to do whatever I can to try and convince Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky that they should want to go all in with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, it didn't pan out, and both those players ended up going elsewhere. But that speaks to an ownership and a management group that is pretty much fixated on what they know has to get done and the work that has to get done, but the belief that they can be a legitimate Stanley Cup contending team. And look, you know, we talked about Pierre-Luc Dubois earlier. I'm not suggesting that, you know, he's not going to make a move sooner rather than later. What I know from Kekalainen is he knows when there is the right fit and the right opportunity. And if he can find a fit, in the upcoming season leading up to the April 12th NHL trade deadline that makes the Blue Jackets stronger, and it has to include Dubois, then of course he's going to make that deal. So I think Columbus is always going to be one of those teams that has to be a team of interest because of management, because of coaching, and because of how well that team is built. They're still a very, very good team. And he's been aggressive. You know, Jarmo Kekalainen has been aggressive. I mentioned, the stuff that he did in leading up to the season, that offseason that saw Panarin and Bobrovsky leave. But we forget that he acquired Max Domi and making a pretty significant deal and moving Josh Anderson to the Montreal Canadiens. So Jarmo is, he's a general manager that isn't afraid to go down swinging.
No, for sure. And with a cap hit that Dubois has for this year and next year, does make it feasible to move with the certainty with the salary cap going forward here. But shifting gears to the Vancouver Canucks, Travis Hamonic obviously goes there on a PTO. You tweeted out this morning, all kind of indications or whatnot. Looks like a one-year deal, I guess, with seeing how things go with the cap-wise with LTIR. But where are things, obviously, follow up on that. Elaborate a little bit on that more, if you can, Dregs.
Yeah, well, the Vancouver Canucks have been talking to the Travis Hamonic group for literally months. They have been dating back, just post return to play, right? When Travis Hamonic opted out and didn't play with the Calgary Flames, obviously the Vancouver Canucks were more focused on going as deep as they could. But when they went into their offseason and it became obvious there was going to be change, they were going to lose key pieces. They end up losing Chris Tanev, who goes to the Calgary Flames along with Jacob Markstrom. Jim Benning, had to look at some of the other options that had to be considered. And, the Vancouver Canucks are a team that is right against the salary cap. As far as the Hamonic camp is concerned, they were hoping as a hometown boy that the Winnipeg Jets were going to be the first into the pool, right into free agency. And Winnipeg signed Dylan DeMello, and then they quickly shifted over to the left side on their D and didn't really have a spot for Travis Hamonic. And, they didn't want to lowball him and offer him something that, at the time wasn't going to make a lot of sense for him. So they just kind of left him out there. And then Calgary circled back and wondered, well, maybe Travis Hamonic wants to come back to the Flames. And Ottawa kicked tires, and the Montreal Canadiens were in the mix, primarily the Canadian clubs. And so I think in this fit with Vancouver, it makes a lot of sense. As has been reported, it doesn't look like Mike Ferland, sadly, is going to be healthy enough to start the season. So Jim Benning is going to have LTIR that he can utilize. It'll be a one-year deal. I'm not sure exactly what the money is, but it's going to be less than Travis Hamonic was hoping or expecting. I mean, you go back to last season prior to the pandemic and prior to the start of the season, there were extension discussions that were happening between Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames and Kevin Epp, who represents Travis Hamonic. And the money and the term at that point didn't make sense to either. Not to Hamonic anyway. And he wanted to wait a little bit longer. Now, in hindsight, financially, he'd have been better, I suppose, to take that deal. But, that's just the way the market is. And especially with the unrestricted free agents, if this has to be a reset for Travis Hamonic with the Vancouver Canucks and he gets that one-year deal, as I expect he will, then he'll be in a good situation either in Vancouver or elsewhere to perhaps work off of that, when the season ends and we look to next year.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously next year we're all hoping for better times and fans back in the rink. And Sticking with the Canucks before I throw out the Brody here. Any update on Travis Green contract extension? I know that that market is pretty passionate about, you know, their players and their managers and coaches, but and a guy that you had on your podcast, which was a great interview, by the way, but thoughts on Travis Green and where things are at there?
Well, I'm not sure exactly, to be fair, right? And in utter respect to the Canucks and Travis Green, they've kept those discussions, you know, in the boardroom or, you know, between Jim Benning and the Aquilinis and Travis Green. I can't imagine they don't get something done. And I can't imagine it's not sooner rather than later, simply because, you know, Travis Green is a highly respected NHL head coach, but he's also a coach that, you know, the organization has groomed. And they've had great success with him in leading that group on the bench. So, yeah, I mean, everything is a negotiation, right? And I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen, as I said, in the near future. But to say that I have the information that it's going to get done before they drop the puck on January 13th wouldn't be accurate. But I know that there's an appetite both from Travis's perspective and from Benning's standpoint as general manager to get something done there.
Darren, if we go to East to Ottawa, they've got a lot of change going on. They got a new goalie, a bunch on the back end, and as well as up front via trades and signings.
Yeah.
How do you think they stack up in the first of all, do you think these are the right moves to make them a competitive team this season?
Well, Brody, I do. Look, when you start with Matt Murray in goal, I loved that deal. I did, because, you know, Matt Murray had high success with the Pittsburgh Penguins, obviously, but I don't think that he ever got as much credit as he rightly deserved. And, you know, some of that was living in the shadow of Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh was absolutely beloved and still is. And I don't feel like Matt Murray earned a high enough level of respect. So at the age that he is, I think that to have an opportunity to hit a reset button, which he will, with a team that, you know, has added some depth players here, has added some experience, but is fundamentally moving on a wave of youth, I think he's going to fit beautifully into that grouping. But he's got to prove that he is hitting the reset button, because they're counting on him to be as good as he needs to be in Ottawa. And then beyond that, I'm more interested in the younger core. I like bringing Derek Stepan in on a shorter term. I think that he's going to provide that leadership experience that they need. He's an effective player still up the middle of the ice. But they've got so much coming in way of how they've developed their players in Belleville and the young players that they've been patient with at the NHL level as well. But what's clear is when you bring in Cedric Paquette and you bring in Braden Coburn and you bring in some of the other pieces that they brought in, that it's not just about development. They want these guys to develop at full NHL speed, right? And they want to make sure that it's more than and keeping the fan base satisfied based on how competitive things are. You have to be more than competitive. You've got to be willing and able to win hockey games. And I think that the Ottawa Senators now, with what they've brought into the mix, are most definitely going to be able to do that. Because if you're a veteran player coming into that training camp, you've got to be willing to compete to earn a spot. And when you've got that balance between that older player who knows that he's got to fight for his ice time and the younger player who wants to prove to DJ Smith and Pierre Dorion that they deserve to be in the National Hockey League and playing regular minutes on a full-time basis, well, that creates an internal competition that I think ends up in being a better team maybe than they're being projected right now. I don't know that. I think Ottawa is going to nibble at a playoff spot. And I know that maybe sounds a little bit too ambitious at this point, but given the time off that some of these younger guys have had because of the pandemic to get stronger and to work on their skill set and all that, combined with the pieces that they brought in, I think Ottawa could be a surprise in the East. I really do.
One of the players I wanted to ask you about, really high draft pick. He hasn't really found his way anywhere he's been. Alex Galchenyuk. How do you think that is going to be a good fit in Ottawa? And what's been his issue? I don't want to say issue, but why hasn't he panned out as well as others have thought?
Well, I mean, that's probably a $10, $20 million question, isn't it? Because, you know, when Alex Galchenyuk broke into the National Hockey League, I think the expectations were through the roof on the skill set and everything that he could be, you know. And then he's gone here and he's gone there, and you know, his time in Montreal, well documented. In my opinion, he was given lots of chances there. He was given chances to be a center. He was given chances to develop on the wing, and he just couldn't get his footing for whatever reason. And, you know, at this stage of his career, that's not on coaching. That's not on management. That's not on anyone who plays with Alex Galchenyuk. It's 100% on him. So he's going to quickly run out of opportunity, but he's got a skill set, doesn't he? You know, he can skate. We've seen enough of him to see that there's a high level of talent there. He just can't string it together on a continued basis. So that's got to stop. So he's going to get the chance in Ottawa yet one more time to prove that he can be an impactful NHL player. And that's what they're counting on. He's a project. That's what he is at this stage of his career, but he's not that old and he shouldn't be that. But he is going to get ample opportunity in Ottawa to use all the strengths, but he's got to commit to playing the game the right way. And if he does that, and he's not worried about who he's playing with or where he's playing in terms of his position, be it on the wing or center, then I think that he's going to have a chance here to rebuild, you know, his career. But he's going to have to take advantage of it because there won't be many more after this one if it doesn't work out.
Right on. If we move over to Montreal now, in my opinion, they had the best offseason of any Canadian team, maybe in the whole NHL, actually. What are your thoughts on all the change they have going on there?
And how much I wouldn't argue with you. You know, even if you look at the North Division alone, with honorable mention in Calgary, we kind of touched on and bringing in Jacob Markstrom and Chris Taff, and honorable mention to Josh Levo. I think Mark Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens hit it out of the park. And it dates back to the trade acquiring Josh Anderson. I've always been a fan of Josh Anderson. He needs to stay healthy, and I know he doesn't control that, so it sounds a bit ridiculous to say it as bluntly as that. What I mean by saying it that way is if he does stay healthy and he's able to contribute 56 games of the regular season, then I think Montreal is going to be a real legit team going into the playoffs, because he's your kind of prototypical old-school power forward with some high-end polish. And then you bring in Tyler Toffoli, who has proven in the NHL that he's a legit goal scorer. You know, he's going to push for 30. And then you look at all the other fingerprints of Mark Bergevin throughout that lineup. Most recently, Corey Perry. I love that signing, too. You know, Corey Perry, again, if you can put the asterisk beside him, you know, if he gets warmed up through 56 games, who doesn't want to watch Corey Perry in the playoffs? You know, he's always been, yeah, of course, he's a proven playoff performer. And he's gotten smart with age, right? That experience has kind of rubbed some of the nastiness off Corey Perry, but he can still be creatively dirty. So he's got that element about him, but all of a sudden he'll chip in a goal or two or five, you know, that are timely goals because of his experience. And, you know, bringing in Jake Allen was key. The signing of Edmondson. I mean, go down the list. You know, Mark Bergevin has rejigged this lineup. When we talk about renovations versus rebuilds in the NHL, that's what I look at as a real important renovation. He touched basically every position of his roster, but he did it in a meaningful manner. He made some tough choices. Trading Max Domi wasn't the easiest thing in the world. But he did it because he knew he was getting a good player back. You know, he bolstered the position of goal. So that takes a little bit of heat off Carey Price. So they could probably manage his schedule. And the schedules are going to be intense, again, because of the shortened NHL season. So I think you're bang on in saying that you look around the NHL, there wouldn't be many teams that are better than the Montreal Canadiens based on the changes that were made in a relatively short period of time.
Perfect. Can move over to Winnipeg now. I was actually really excited to watch Cole Perfetti play. He hasn't really done a ton other than on the power play, in my opinion.
Well, of course, he has a chance. You know, you're drafted 10th overall in the NHL. You're going to be given every opportunity to show your stuff. A little bit different this year because there are no exhibition games. And every single game is going to be a playoff sort of environment and mentality. You know, you can't have a 3 or 5 game losing skid and compete for the playoffs. That's just a condensed schedule. So unfortunately for Cole and those first year rookie players who are coming into their first NHL camps, it is going to be trial by fire. I'm a big Cole Perfetti fan. My son played with Cole for 5 straight years in minor hockey here in Whitby, Ontario. So I've got to watch his kid firsthand from, you know, a 9-year-old all the way up. So I'm a believer in his skill set, but he's not NHL ready. He's not. And that's fair. The majority of players coming onto their draft year are not NHL ready. And look, we watched Tim Stützle, who for me looked absolutely terrific for the Germans. You know, is it a slam dunk guarantee that he is going to wow everybody in Ottawa? No, there's no guarantee. I mean, he's going to play the season because, he's top 5 draft pick in the NHL, and those guys always find their way. Quentin Byfield, you know, probably hasn't enjoyed the World Juniors that he was hoping or expecting. But, guys, we see it every year on the world stage with the World Junior Championships. Those guys who come in as a first-year player, it's so darn difficult to be everything that you think you should be based on how you played in major junior hockey or where you've come from beforehand. But I know the expectations of Cole Perfetti in Winnipeg are high, not this year, but next year, the year after, whenever he's NHL ready. Kevin Cheveleyev from the Winnipeg Jets are not fast-tracking Cole Perfetti. They look at him as being a key piece up the middle of the ice in Winnipeg for a long time to come. So they're going to give him the time he needs to develop.
Yeah, I remember watching him at the Ivan Hlinka, and he was absolutely dynamite, like dynamite. What's the latest on Jack Roslovic?
Well, that one is a sketchy one and a curious one as well. Sketchy only because I'm a bit surprised at the position that Roslovic and his agent Claude Lemieux took. Now, granted, you know, he's a restricted free agent, so he would have had to accept his qualifying offer. He obviously wasn't going to like whatever the Winnipeg Jets were going to throw at him contract-wise. So he didn't have a whole lot of leverage or option at that point. So you get to a place where you know you're not going to accept the contract. You maybe look at what they've got coming. We just talked about Cole Perfetti. I think Jack sees himself as a centerman in the National Hockey League. And he probably sees himself as, at worst, the number 2 center in development, you know, in Winnipeg or in the National Hockey League. So he doesn't like the timeline that the Winnipeg Jets are on. So he just takes advantage of the one option that he has, and that's by withholding his services because he doesn't have a contract. It's an interesting option because, again, we're talking about a shortened year here with 56 regular season games. Roslovic's name has been out there. I wouldn't say that Winnipeg has actively shopped him for the last year or so, but Jack Roslovic's name has been out there for a long time. And clearly the Winnipeg Jets haven't gotten any sort of interest that equates to having a legit trade conversation. Otherwise, he probably would have been moved by now. What happens with Jack Roslovic if that trade doesn't materialize? And all of a sudden, he misses 10, 15, 20-plus games of a regular season that's only 56 games long. So, you know, this is a calculated gamble by Jack Roslovic. I like him. I think he's a good player. I think he needs a fresh start somewhere else, but that's on Winnipeg's terms now, not on Jack Roslovic's terms.
And speaking of fresh starts, what's the latest on Patrick Laine, who's obviously been in the news a lot up over the years there?
Yeah. Well, we obviously haven't had the last conversation about Patrick Laine and his contract, you know, and his long-term status with the Winnipeg Jets. I like this approach, though, and it's a different approach because he's got way more leverage. You know, Kevin Cheveleyev had his media availability earlier last week, and, you know, he openly said, look, we expect that Laine is going to come in and he's going to have his best NHL season of his career. And if that's the case, and that's the expectation, that's the hope of the Winnipeg Jets, then good things are going to happen. You know, again, Patrick Laine's name isn't lobbed out there just because we have nothing better to talk about here in Toronto and national media, TSN. I mean, legitimately, Patrick Laine was in play, but he wasn't being shopped. It is purely contractual. You know, the Winnipeg Jets are a team that pay attention to the dollars. And now moving forward with an 81.5 flat salary cap, not only in 2021, but probably 21, 22, maybe 22, 23, you got to be very, very shrewd in how you invest those dollars. If Patrick Laine has a 40 to 50 goal season, unlikely in a 56 game season, but, you know, let's just prorate it if you would. You know, what's he going to command? And if that number goes anywhere near $9 million on an annual average salary, I don't know that the Winnipeg Jets can afford to pay that for a winger, even though, you know, he's a star player, will be a star player, and they have other needs. So that's why that whole dialogue was started in the first place. So it's a to be determined, to be fair. Again, the expectation is that Laine is going to be good. I know Patrick is going into this training camp with that expectation, but he may want to prove that, you know, for all those teams that kicked tires on me, trade conversation, but didn't really legitimately get involved, then I'm going to prove to you that I'm legit. I can be the star player that I know I'm going to be. So this one is going to be a fun to watch type of situation, I think.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely something to keep an eye on. And shifting gears over to the Leafs, Dregs, they had quite the offseason too here. And I guess kind of starting, where do you see Joel Thornton playing? Is it with Matthews and Marner, or how do you see that shaping up before we jump into the roster kind of move?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting situation for Sheldon Keefe, you know, because of all the experience he now has to work with. And look, I don't think it's saying anything critical or out of the line of reality and suggesting that Joe Thornton's better days are behind him. But that doesn't mean that he can't be a very influential piece of the puzzle. And of course he's going to be. You know, the experience that Joe Thornton brings on and off the ice, I still feel like he's got something to contribute, certainly on the power play. I'd be a little bit worried 5-on-5 whether or not he can maintain the pace that Matthews and Marner and their top six are going to want to be going at on a 5-on-5 shift by shift basis. So I think it could be spot duty for Joe Thornton. But, you know, that's a story that has to play itself out. And it's going to depend on what his health is like. You know, Jason Spezza, I think, is a classic example of how Sheldon Keefe can weave those, you know, kind of past their prime type of players into impactful situations. And, you know, then you get rewarded by doing that. Doesn't always pan out that way. So I think we'll see something similar. I think that Joe is happy to be a depth guy, at least to start the year and get some time on special teams, particularly on the power play. But for me, if Joe Thornton is playing center ice and your top two lines with the Toronto Maple Leafs 5-on-5, then there's something not right, just given the experience that they've got and the young talent that they have available to them. That would be ahead of Joe, just from a common sense perspective.
Yeah. Thoughts on the moves Kyle Dubas made this offseason here for the Leafs? You like some, like most of them?
Well, let's go through them. Yeah, I think so. If we start with TJ Brody as an example, you know, that was an area that we all speculated on for quite some time, right? How are they going to remedy that right side on the blue line? And we know, again, historically speaking, that Dubas had conversations with Brad Treliving about trade when Nazem Kadri was with the Toronto Maple Leafs and whether or not they could make something work with TJ Brody. The Alex Pietrangelo thing never really made any sense, did it? I mean, it was fun to talk about and it made for good media fodder and all of that. But we knew that, you know, Toronto couldn't afford yet another big dollar piece like that. So to get in the game as quickly as Toronto did in signing TJ Brody, I think that serves some purpose. It really does, obviously. And, you know, Morgan Riley, for me, is a proven player. He doesn't have to prove anything more to me, but it frees him up to be more of the player that we know he can be. Bogosian signing, again, adds depth on that blue line. So I like what they did, defensively speaking. And up front, I mean, it's going to be fascinating. We talked about Ottawa earlier and how there has to be and there will be that spirit of competition in camp. Well, again, aside from the guys who you know are going to get the ice time based on contract, and there's a lot of them with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but those are the core guys. There's still some young and up-and-comers and some of the experienced guys like Spezza and Thornton that you salt into that mix and whatnot that have something to prove, right? They want to prove that they still have it, or the young guys want to prove that they can still be, you know, a player that has potential and tremendous upside. So when you bring all of that in, then that translates into a high level of competition. So without naming specific names and what I expect this guy to do or that player to be like, I like Toronto. I think the Maple Leafs, when I look at the North Division, we talked about Montreal and everything that Bergevin did and the fact that probably the Montreal Canadiens did more to improve their team than perhaps any other team in the NHL. When I look at the North Division, Toronto is the team for me that has the most talent. They've got the most talent. But does that mean that the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to win that division? Not by a long shot, because they still have a number of questions that require answers moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see what happens. And they did make some kind of moves there that should kind of shake up that locker room a bit and make them more accountable at times. And
yeah,
shifting gears to the Calgary Flames and the moves that Brad Treliving has made. Obviously, he came out today and kind of hinted at that there might be another forward in the mix on a PTO going to Calgary. But the moves that they made and how things look for that roster going forward here.
Well, I mean, he's a general manager, guys, that's in everything. Absolutely everything. Now, he doesn't land everything, of course, but he's having multiple conversations on a daily basis, just dabbling to make sure. So when he talks about a PTO forward, he's just looking to bring in another competitive body into camp. And the PTO signings this year are unique, aren't they? You know, we talked about, Travis Hamonic and what's gone on in Vancouver. And you've got Mike Hoffman, who signed the PTO with the St. Louis Blues. And we all know it's a one-year contract. You know, he's just doing the St. Louis Blues a favor by allowing them to maximize their LTIR time with Tarasenko and Alex Steen. That could be something that Brad Treliving is working on. But either way, you know, he's interested in perhaps bringing in a little bit more depth. So we'll wait and see what happens with that depth. But I like what he did. And next to the Montreal Canadiens in the Canadian division, I would put the Calgary Flames right there. Because Jacob Markstrom, you know, I know you guys watch the Vancouver Canucks a lot. He clearly was their MVP last year, maybe the last 2 years, right? And so to steal him away from a rival and hopefully, again, knock on wood that Markstrom can stay healthy and he picks up where he left off, that solves the problems of goaltending for the Calgary Flames. Chris Tanev still remains underrated for me. I always like Chris Tanev. And again, another good pickup from the Vancouver Canucks. And even Josh Lebo. You know, it was like Treliving was like sleeping in a tent in Jim Benning's backyard when all this was going on. You know, Josh Lebo is one of those forwards that, you know, if he's playing in your bottom six, then you're set because he's very competitive. But he can comfortably play in your top six as well. So I like what Treliving did. But they were also in, as I mentioned earlier, in on Travis Hamonic and the notion of bringing him back. So Treliving is always one of those general managers where I know he's not done. I think the heavy lifting is done, but be it a PTO forward or signing another depth defenseman, he's always cooking something out there. So stay tuned with Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames. But when I look at that West in the Canadian, the North Division, I'm not sure what we're going to see at Edmonton other than what is obvious and what we have learned to expect from McDavid and Draisaitl. I think Edmonton has improved. Tyson Barrie on the back end. We talked about Winnipeg. Now we're talking about Calgary. I mean, flip a coin for me, which of those three teams is going to be the best of that threesome? Could be Calgary, given the changes that they made, particularly in goal. Could be Edmonton because of the star power that they've got. And now they've got a power play quarterback who's coming in Tyson Barrie. But I'm not so sure what to expect out of Winnipeg. So that's going to make this North Division a whole lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Great to watch. And to stick with the Calgary Flames, one more question there, and I'll throw it to Brody to ask about the Oilers. But Elias Lindholm as a center or a winger, Dregs, where do you best see him at?
Probably longer term as a centerman. But man, are they happy with the player that he is right now. And so when you've got a versatile forward like that, then you're pretty much locked and loaded. Again, assuming that you're comfortable with the depth that you have up the middle of the ice, then I think they're happy with what they've got in him. But I would say longer term, just given the evolution of the Calgary Flames, and how defensively strong he is, right? He's got a real good hockey IQ. When you talk about hockey sense and all of that, Lindholm is one of those players that has that in abundance. So if you have the luxury of playing him on the wing, then you're pretty good up the middle. But I wouldn't count him out of being, you know, a centerman in the not too distant future.
Darren, if you come up the road about 300 kilometers, we get to our hometown Edmonton Oilers here. Few jobs up for the taking, but not a lot, which is probably a good thing. Tell me about Devin Shore. I don't really know a lot about him.
Well, he's been around a while, obviously. And, you know, there's a piece. He's going to be hungry. He's going to be hungry coming into that situation. And for any player who's still relatively unproven, and I think he is somewhat unproven yet, you know, land in a spot like that where there's nothing but opportunity, you got to be just eager to get at it and prove to Kenny Holland and everybody that, you know, I'm going to take advantage of this. I'm going to prove to you that I am more than ready and I'm going to be the piece here that you've been looking for. But he's got to prove that, right? He's got to prove that. But Kenny Holland is one of those general managers who is terrific. Doesn't always work out. Look, like, you know, they brought Athanasiou into Edmonton, and I thought that was going to be a good fit, mostly because of how quick he is. You know, he's a very fast hockey player. I thought, hey, look, you know what? If he has the benefit here, the luxury of playing with Connor McDavid, and he can skate with him, he might get 10, 15, 20 goals just bouncing off his shin pads. You know, all he's got to do is get near the net, and who knows how that might pan out. And for whatever reason, it just didn't. It didn't pan out. So when you're playing with better players and you take advantage of your opportunity, both defensively or offensively, depending on your position, you just want to be in an environment where you're going to win and you're going to be given a chance. And Kenny's terrific at finding those players and trying to squeeze the most out of them. So I don't think Devin will be much different in that sense.
There's a bunch of forwards up front, Tyler Benson's and McLeod's, Cahoon's. Who do you think has the best chance of those forwards to actually crack the opening night roster, and not only crack the opening night roster, but stick around for the course of the season?
Yeah, and that's a tough one, you know, again, because of the cap. With taxi squads and the expanded roster, you know, those guys are going to get a better look. But that's a tricky balance too, right? Because you want to make sure that if these players – potentially are going to be NHL players, or you think they're going to be close. You know, and I think of a Benson as an example. Cahoon kind of fits into that mix too. You know, Benson's a young guy. So, you know, it probably isn't going to do him any good to be saddled as an extra player, you know, at the NHL level. He's going to need as much time as he can get continuing to hone his skills at the American League level. But that's what Edmonton is hoping for, I think. No different than every other cap team, right? You need one of those good young players because of you know, the fact that they're cheap, to come in and just seize the opportunity. You know, Kotar Yamamoto comes to mind, right? you know, there's a player who, when they drafted him, yeah, there was a lot of concern over his size. And, you know, there were some in the organization who went, I don't know if this kid's going to pan out. But they believed in him. And they gave him some time. And they could see how smart he was again and how fast he was, which is a key part of his game. But they didn't rush him into a situation. But when that opportunity was provided, then the player took advantage of it. And so I see something similar in these guys. But because of the salary cap and because of the shortened season and because the Oilers are as hungry as any team to prove that they're ready to turn that corner, you know, there's going to be opportunity. But for these young guys, they've got to produce, and that can be a challenge. And how many games do you give that player before you go, okay, we can't see that player digress either. So if they're going to earn their spot, then they're flat out going to earn it, and it'll be a good story down the road.
And we move to the back end. Biggest debate around Edmonton is always the back – well, not always. Currently is the back end with the likes of Caleb Jones, who I predict is going to have a breakout season. Not finally, but I think he's probably ready and overripe and ready to roll. Ethan Bear did that last year. I think it's probably a little crazy to think he's going to take another huge step forward. And then we've got Evan Bouchard coming.
Yeah.
And the talk around town is, oh, can you have this? Can you have that? I'm of the opinion you can't have all three of those guys in the lineup for the season, or you're just not good enough. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I can tell you, anytime there was a major trade discussion around the Edmonton Oilers, and I mean, we're talking about a significant piece, right? Evan Bouchard's name was always kind of attached to it. Now, that can be just, you know, speculation around the NHL. And I chose my word carefully there because it wasn't media speculation only, right? So is that teams are identifying Evan Bouchard as the player that they want, or that the Edmonton Oilers are willing to consider Evan Bouchard as a trade item if they're improving in a different area. The one thing I know is, and I look at the Anaheim Ducks as an example, you can never have too many high quality developing good young defensemen because of what I just said. They're either going to make your team better by their play on the ice, or they're going to put you in a position where there is a trade opportunity. You've got to make a tough call on one of those guys, but they're going to make you better on what's coming back the other way. And I mean, they're so deep back there, provided those players continue to develop. I think Ethan Bear is going to be really, really good. They'd tell you that he's really, really good already, but I don't think that we've quite seen the upside yet. I like Caleb Jones as well. Where's Darnell Nurse? You know, is he topped off, or, you know, is what you see what you get? And if that's the case, that's not bad either. And then, as we touched on earlier, you've got a bit of a question mark in bringing in Tyson Barrie on the short-term contract. But with those young pieces, man, there's no reason to think that Oiler blue line isn't going to be formidable and probably at a place already where we can stop wondering whether or not Kenny Holland or the Oilers have to go out and do something about it, because I think internally they've got the pieces there.
Great, thanks. One more question for you. Not really related to hockey, but I listened to your guys' podcast with Ray Ferraro, and you guys touched on something that was an absolute game changer in my house. I got two kids, a teenager, an 11-year-old, and my wife. We're big into the bubblies and crushing our pop cans before we put them in the recycling. Game changer. So thanks for that. That was unbelievable.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is. And see, that wasn't even rehearsed. Like, I did not know Ray was going to do that. But I could tell he was fidgeting with something, right? It was an empty water bottle. And I've always done that. And I don't know if it's just the way my brain works. I'd like to think that it's because I'm trying to save the environment, but that's a flat out lie. I've just always twisted the air out of the bottle, put the cap back on. And for me, it was more laziness. Like, why would I fill up my big blue bin with cans or empty water bottles when I can put twice as many in when I crush them? But I know where it comes from now as we have this conversation. My father-in-law, God rest his soul, he had a can crusher. Like, when they first came out, I think he was like the first guy in line to get the can crusher. So, you know, in the porch of the house in Saskatchewan, he had a big old garbage can, plastic garbage can. And whether it were beer cans or pop cans or empty water bottles, excuse me, he would always have the can crusher. And he knew exactly within like 10 cans how many cans would be in a full garbage barrel.
Wow.
Yeah. And he'd take them into recycling and get a $7 or whatever it was. So I've been a can crusher and a bottle squisher for many, many years. But I was glad to see Ferrero is doing it. And I'm happy to hear it's a game changer in your house as well.
Perfect.
I'll start doing it over here too. So we'll get the trend going. So, all right, Jags, we'll finish up on that. We appreciate you coming back on with us again and kicking off season 4 of our podcast. It's greatly appreciated.
Hey, you bet, boys. And next time we do this, we'll at least be not only speculating on what the teams are going to look like, but we'll actually have some games to chew on. And
yeah.
Of you are going to be, some of our listeners and viewers are going to be disappointed and some maybe pleasantly surprised, but we'll have lots of fun. And by the time we do it again, we'll probably be speculating on this player in play. What do you think this team is going to do trade-wise? So it'll be a lot more fun than what we've been having to deal with for the last several months, for sure.
Exactly. Great words. And all the best to you and your family in 2021, Dregs. Thanks again.
All right, guys. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Take care.
When you hire a contractor, you want things to go smooth. Smooth as a driveway poured by Pete's Concrete. You want a solid guarantee. Solid as a basement floor by Pete's Concrete. You want Pete. Pete's Concrete. For sidewalks, patios, your leaky basement, Pete lays his reputation down with every job, and he offers you finishes and colors you won't find anywhere else. You want someone who proudly puts their name on the work they do. Pete puts his name in concrete. Pete's Concrete.
We are now joined by Bob Stauffer from the Edmonton Oilers Radio Network and 630 Ched. Bob, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Can't complain. How was your Christmas and New Year's?
Well, it's different, Josh, to say the least. You know that, man. Like, it's a whole other world right there, right? We didn't have anybody over at the house this year. Nobody flew to Hawaii for a couple days either.
Times.
All I can tell you is I got a lot of empathy for a lot of people out there, and I hope we get to a place where maybe we don't worry so much about certain things that we're worried a lot about right now. So with age comes empathy. Is that a saying? I'm not sure, but that's kind of how I feel. Like, you know, you got to kind of make a concerted effort to understand the positions of others. And you know what? It was a combination of NFL, college football, and hockey here over the last little while, so it's been a pretty good run.
Yeah, your counterpart there, your buddy Jack Michael's probably pretty happy, with the Browns winning. That's how he put that tweet out too. So
I'm just amazed that a guy from Western Pennsylvania ends up being a Cleveland Browns fan and not a Steelers fan.
I know.
I'm not even sure, because he loves Pittsburgh. And you know what? He's got everybody in the media from Edmonton. We've all come to terms with the fact Pittsburgh's a pretty cool town. Like, it's totally, you know, in the late 70s, everybody, you know, they had a high rates of drug abuse, and you know, it was the mines were closing and the steel mills were closing, and they've rebuilt that city. It is a beautiful city to go to, but how in the heck does a guy from Western Pennsylvania end up being a Cleveland Browns fan and not a fan of the Steelers, especially given what they accomplished in the 1970s? I don't get that.
Yeah, no, I don't get it either. So I guess we'll shift gears to hockey here. So obviously Sweden's out, Bob. You know, looks like Broberg was playing with something or banged up. But thoughts on him during the tournament? I know you're at a few of the games there, mostly all the games that he played. What was your thoughts on his play during this tournament?
Well, you know, Josh, you and Brody know the game. I mean, you can watch it and you can see firsthand that there was obviously limitations to what Broberg could do on the ice. He couldn't basically complete a stride. It didn't look like he had confidence in pushing off. And then he got drilled a couple times because he was prone, because he didn't have the same explosiveness that he's used to having. And I think he took a shot to the upper body. So, like the game yesterday against Finland, he looked pretty good for two periods, but you could see it in the third period, it caught up to him. My guess is we were talking either a deep bruise in sort of the core, like upper thigh area, a Charlie horse or something like that. And then the shot to the shoulder when he got played against the U.S. So, you know, if you had seen Philip Roberg in the return to play scrimmages back in late July, he didn't even look like the same player. So, and he still, I thought, looked okay, but I felt bad for him because in that situation, the player, you know, he's the captain of the team. He feels compelled to play. And we just didn't see him at 100%. So it's tough to get a gauge on him.
Yeah. No, obviously he had the good first period there. This first start to the game is obviously three assists to get going. Just imagine what he would have been able to do at a full bill of health, right? So, but, and obviously thoughts on Dylan Holloway. Obviously he got a little bit banged up and missed the game, but he's probably, in my mind, he's been an impact in most of the games he's played for Canada. So thoughts on his tournament so far?
Well, it's interesting because against Switzerland, he had two opportunities down the left side to rifle a puck and he didn't shoot it either time. And we're led to believe it was an upper body issue. And I don't know if he can shoot the puck effectively. So, you know, maybe he's got a shoulder problem. I'm not sure what it is. I just know that if you're in the building and they're coming at you, because we're in the end zone, that's where we're sitting up in the Sportsnet Club. And I'm like, why is he not shooting here, right? Like, that's a pretty obvious opportunity to rip one on goal, use the goaltender's pads for a rebound, and then attack the net and pick up the rebound. So, I mean, that said, he was physical. He completes his checks. They're using him in penalty killing role. I think here's the thing with Broberg. I think Broberg has a chance to be a top pairing defenseman. I don't know if he'll be elite offensively. Like, I think Bouchard can be elite offensively, but maybe clearly doesn't have the same skating ability as Broberg. I think in Holloway's case, worst case scenario, third line winger. Best case scenario, second line winger. And, you know, at Wisconsin, he's going to play center for when they go back to play. You know, Josh, as you know, I mean, it's interesting in assessing guys because just for fun, for the people that jump on this podcast, they should take a look at JT Miller. And JT Miller's numbers his first 3 years in the NHL. No one saw a 70-point player in JT Miller. He was available for trade his first three seasons with the Rangers. And people weren't sure what JT Miller was. And what he is now is a top line winger, a top six forward for sure. So I think Holloway works hard. He's smart. He's committed. I don't know if he's got elite offensive instincts, but I think he'll find a way. So he'll play somewhere, you know, second line wing, third line center, third line wing. He'll play somewhere in that role, but he's been pretty good so far for a very deep Canada team.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, shift gears to pretty much the training camp has started today. Were you at the Nate Rink?
No, we had, it was two optionals, originally only scheduled to be one optional. And we did our I was on for the entire availability today, which was in excess of an hour and 20 minutes. So I was on for each of the interviews of the players. It's a very different feel. I think tomorrow's going to reveal a little in terms of, you're always a little bit nervous. Let's just see how many, you know, who's out there. I know Dave Tippett's kind of hinted a bit, you know, could there be a, you know, the Oilers have got some players coming over from hard hit areas in Europe. You know, I would suggest to you that the seven guys that they interviewed today in the Zoom calls were McDavid, Dreisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, and Turris up front. Six players. Seven. Barry Larson and Nurse on defense. You know, obviously they're good to go, and that's a good sign because those are probably the most important guys on the team. But yeah. I kind of want to see what happens tomorrow morning. The first group hits the ice at like 10:15 and get a bit of a gauge on what the lines look like. And away we go.
Yeah. So with you doing Oilers now, are you going to be at the first morning one and then going home? How is that going to work?
Yeah, there's two sessions tomorrow, Josh. And so I'll be at the first one, but I won't be at the second one. I'm going to watch the first hour till about 11:15 and then drive back. It's exactly 29 minutes to my house from Nate. So I've done the math and I know how long it's going to take. And that's just, you know, and that's the unknown with this is everybody has to be flexible and understand things change. Like The Oilers are at Nate, full practice slash scrimmage Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The, you know, semifinals are tomorrow for the World Juniors. And then the finals are on Tuesday. Wednesday's a cleanup day for the World Juniors, and then the Oilers are in Rogers' Place on Thursday. But I don't even know if I've got access to host our show from Rogers' Place. So, yeah. Again, you just that's the new world we're all living in, because yeah. Everybody's having to do business a little bit differently.
So, that was one thing I wanted to ask you about. So, I guess if you don't know that, do you know anything further on games? Obviously, you've talked about our Oilers now that you won't be able to go on the road, but will you guys be up in your porch?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so, but there's no guarantee that's going to happen. It's literally, I mean, there were fans at one time that were allowed in games. I saw Clemson crush Alabama in the national championship game in Santa Clara. And then saw last season, Jack and me went to go see Seattle, San Francisco, was voted the best regular season game of the year in the NFL in Santa Clara. And this year, early in the NFL season, they had fans at that game in Santa Clara. And then they just shut it down and said no sports at all. So these situations are so
fluid, I guess.
They're fluid, and we have to, you know what? We have to be, you know, we have to be flexible. People can think what they want on how severe the virus is. I think most people accept that it's real and legitimate, and there might be different ways to deal with it. And there might be certain places where there might be a higher propensity to getting it. Some of that might be population density. It might be more of a challenge where it's colder, frankly, yeah. You know, where we can see, which is why there were some people that thought there'd be a spike in Canada in the fall. But anyhow, the bottom line is we're at the mercy of this thing. So to answer your question, I do not know at this time.
Yeah, well, hopefully you guys are. I know how much that means to you, and you know, it's just obviously, again, you always talk about it's the privilege, it's the sports toy department of sports, or however you say it. I probably might be saying it wrong.
Toy department of life.
Yeah, exactly. So, still with the Oilers here, obviously. So, is Gaetan Haas the only guy you think that might not be on?
I don't know. I don't know at this stage. Like, I know, you know, like there's guys coming from Europe, and I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I would think that the players that were on the ice today for the optional, I don't have an entire list of them, but certainly the guys that got interviewed today would probably be cleared and good to go, right? Like Dreisaitl has been skating in Edmonton for at least 6 weeks. Like he's been here for a while. McDavid's been here 3 weeks to a month skating.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that says something to me. I will say this, Josh, like, you know, I follow college football and NFL closely. Like the Baltimore Ravens, I think, had high 30s, low 40s in terms of the amount of players at one time or another that had the virus. Okay. And it basically cost them at least one game during the regular season, because they might have beaten Pittsburgh if they had Lamar Jackson playing in that game instead of Robert Griffin III. Now, as it turned out, they were able to make the playoffs anyways. But you look at Alabama, which is a state that's got very high COVID rates. They haven't had any players opt out. Okay. Now you go to that program, and it's a privilege to go to that program, because they're going to get you to the next level. And so what happens is everybody buys in and commits and realizes they got to change their lives and alter their lives and do all the, you know, requisite things that they've been asking us to do since March. But Alabama has had a very low rate of positivity, and we're talking programs like the players are getting tested every day.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just think about that for a second. You know, I know you're involved in the construction business. If you have a company that's an Alberta-based company that's working in Surrey, you can have Alberta and Saskatchewan-based employees fly from Edmonton untested, fly on a commercial flight untested, and work on a work site in Surrey that's untested with 300 people. Now contrast that with an NFL or NCAA organization or NHL team that's testing their athletes every day. It's a pretty safe, it's a pretty safe setup with very strict protocol. Yeah. So I'm hoping, I think we have to be realistic that there's going to be players. And the way it works, Josh, is at the start, nobody, it just says unfit to play until a regular season starts. And then once the regular season starts, according to, if I read the CBA right, at that point, they'll then declare this player is not eligible due to COVID. But between now and the start of the regular season, it's just going to stay unfit to play. So we might not even know. Like a guy might have a, you know, he might have a hamstring injury or a tweak or something that keeps him off. And we're not even going to know. So it puts us in a, you know, but I think we have to respect the athletes in that situation too, right? There's a degree of privacy that comes with it that frankly should be their call.
Oh, I agree.
Hey Bob, if we look at the Oilers going into this season on the back end, we've got Bear obviously had a great season. Do you I think Caleb Jones is due for a breakout season. I'm not saying he'll be an all-star or anything, but I think he's going to be a really good, solid NHL player. Do you think they can go with those two in addition to Evan Bouchard for the entire season, have three guys that young, that raw, and expect to be good enough?
I think Brody, that what we'll see is Bear is going to be on the team for sure and playing in the top four. There's no question that that's going to be the case. Okay. Yeah. So he's, I think that Tyson Barrie is going to play, like Tyson Barrie is going to play more minutes than Matt Benning did. Matt Benning played between 12 to 14 minutes a game. And Tyson Barrie is probably going to play. I mean, he's going to play on every power play. So I would suggest Tyson Barrie will probably play 19 to 21 minutes a game. And then Bear last year played 22 and Benning played 12 to 14. So you might see Bear only play 20 and you might see Barrie play, you know, for the sake of argument, 19 to 21. And then, you know, clearly Larson's going to be killing penalties. He plays about 19 minutes a game. Those guys are all right shots. So I know that Bouchard's in terrific shape. That's what I've heard, is that he's really in good shape right now. And I do think the guys that have been over in Europe might have a bit of an advantage out of the gate because they've been playing games. But I think he's going to be hard pressed to play ahead of those three guys to start. So that's on the right side. On the left side, I think Jones is going to play. Obviously Nurse played 22 and a half, 23 minutes a game last year. Nurse is going to play 23, 24 minutes a game. To me, I see Jones getting in 15 and a half to 17 minutes a game on the left side. And then we'll see how they deploy Cuckoo and Russell. So Russell probably gets a start early because he's been with the team, but I don't think there'd be any hesitation to play Slater Cuckoo. And I think you guys know, like, we have a compressed schedule. You're going to need, realistically, I think the Oilers are going to need 12 defensemen during the season for 56 games. I think that's the reality of the situation. Bouchard's going to be on the team. I don't think there's any debate he'll be on the taxi squad. So too would Legacy, and they might not be in the top seven. I've mentioned the other seven defensemen already, so let's just say Nurse with Bear, let's say Jones with Barrie. Maybe they do a defense pairing of Russell and Larson. That's a first unit PK pairing as well, right? And those guys play those sort of shutdown minutes. And then Cuckoo's the number seven. So there's your 7D. And then I got Lagesson and Bouchard here at the start. But then all bets are off once we get into the American League season in around February 5th. I kind of want to have Bouchard playing. But I don't know about injury, and I don't know about illness. So, you know, I guess time will tell. But I do think by the end of the year, given the compressed nature of the schedule, you'll need somewhere between 10 to 12 defensemen to play.
Oh. Yeah. Go ahead, Brody.
What about up front? Is there any surprises you think that are going to make the team, really, like as a full-time NHL hockey player? Because the way I look at it, without really any lines or anything, I only see two spots up front available.
What two spots do you see open?
Fourth line center and then a left winger along somewhere, you know, top six, top nine, somewhere in there.
Well, fourth lines, yeah. I mean, McDavid, Draisaitl, and Turris are going to be the top three centers. We know that. Nuge can pinch hit in the top six if one of those two guys goes out. Fourth line center for sure. We got to see what's going on with Haas. And then Kara's got an opportunity. Like, one thing you could do, just food for thought here, you're going to need one of Neil or Chiasson to play the net front on the power play. Okay. What you could, and Archibald's going to play. Okay.
Like,
but the top three right wings might be Cassian to start, Yamamoto with Draisaitl, and they might just stick Puljujärvi with Turris and say, here's where you're starting, here's where you are for 15 games. In my mind, if you know Chiasson's going to play, the guy that is the best bet as a right shot to play the left side is Archibald. So let's just say you played Archibald, Kara, and Chiasson out of the gate. Well, those guys are specialists. Like, they play special teams. Kara's a good penalty killer. struggled 5-on-5 last year. Archibald can play all over the lineup, depending upon who's going and who's not. And Chiasson's good on the power play, and then you got Archibald and Kay Rakell and penalties. So that might be a way you put together your fourth line. For forwards, I think we'll see 17 to 19 forwards play in a 56-game schedule. Just doing the math. Like, I don't think it's going to be just 14 guys. Like, I think Patrick Russell will be on the taxi squad because the coach trusts him. And he might not be in the top four lines to start the year, but I think he's going to be around because they can throw him in at any time. They know he can, you know, check. Probably will add a little bit more physicality to his game. Think of how he played against Calgary on February 1st a year ago. That nasty game where we had the line brawl and he was running around. That's what he needs to do. Like, he needs to continue to, if he wants to find a way in. So I certainly see six right wings getting games. I see six right wings playing in the first 10 games of the year. So Cassian, Yamamoto, Puljujärvi, Chiasson, Archibald, who's technically a right wing. Archibald's playing every game. Like, there's no question in my mind he's playing it. And then Patrick Russell. So there's six on the right side that are going to play, in my opinion, no matter what, in the first 10 games. So that's why I'm pretty comfortable saying I think we're going to be looking at 17 to 19 forwards this year, like in 56 games.
On the other wing, I know you're a big fan of Ryan McLeod. Do you think he can, this season, do you think he can be a top six somehow?
No.
No?
Total wild card for me. I think he is here on the, again, until February 5th. He's a lanky kid, so he's got some size to him. Biggest thing is he can skate. If you can't skate, can't play. Like, there's no places anymore for, you know, soft, small, slow guys, right? Like, Mark Letestu joked about himself when he retired and said he was small and slow, but he could think his way around the game. You got to be able to move a bit. So that's going to give McLeod a chance. I don't see him, Brody, I don't see him getting a look in the much of a look unless there's a significant amount of injuries in the top six. But this might be the year he gets NHL games. I will grant you that. Like, he could be a guy. I know they like him, and I wouldn't worry about – I mean, last year was his first year pro. I wouldn't worry too – was it his first year pro? No, I'm trying to think of if it was or wasn't. Anyway, it's been so long ago. I'm not worried about his offensive production because I think he's going to be a bottom six guy. I'm hoping he can be a fourth-line center. I'm hoping that's what he can end up being. I've got him penciled in for next season, though, for 21-22. I have him as a fourth. I have him on the team as a fourth line center next year.
Okay, well, two more for you. Benson, have you heard? Is he working on his skating so he can kind of be a full time NHL?
I think he can play in the league, but there's the contrast, right? Like, McLeod can fly, and some people would say, is he in the guts of the game? Benson can make plays in the gut, protects the puck well. But the question is, does he have the foot speed? Like, they're two pretty interesting. It's a completely fair. What do you guys think? Josh, what do you think of Benson?
You know what? I saw him at the last two Perry Pern skates, and I thought he did pretty good. Like, his skating got better off the first year I went and watched. And then the last year, they obviously didn't have one this summer, but the one before. You know, I thought, you know, he looked better. The biggest thing too, I think he was healthy for the first time in a while too. And
yeah,
Dan Lejoie. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a trainer in St. Albert, but he kind of worked with Benson a bit, and he said he's in the right mindset where it is now, and he feels more comfortable. But you know, I know he played a bit last year there before we got the pause, but I think there's a player there. He's probably, I don't know if he's probably a good at third line guy in my mind. I think he's.
Oh, I tell you, at this stage of the game, I'd be happy if he ended up being a third line left wing. Yeah. Seriously, at this, just yeah. My concern. Am I concerned? Like, I think he's smart enough to play in the top six. I really do, and I think he's got some offensive instincts. One of the things that hurt him is Marody and Benson were the Oilers had the Flames rookies and Oilers rookies last year down in Red Deer. And the Calgary guys came out flying, and Cooper was coming off a concussion. And I don't think he was 100% right at the start of the year. And there's an old saying, you only get one chance to make a first impression. And and Calgary kind of took it a bit to Edmonton in that game. And if you're a new coaching staff watching that, you're kind of thinking, well, you know, Benson had 66 points or whatever the year before, like he should dominate in that situation. But he was partially being, you know, he's tied to his centerman in terms of Cooper Marody. That was kind of Cooper's first, like, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the 18-19 season ended for Marody getting hit from behind, basically head first in the boards in Colorado in the playoffs. And it was a bad concussion. Like, it was one of those ones that keep guys out a while. And so I'm very leery of being critical with players with that, because for some guys, that's a year and a half process.
Yeah.
That's how long it takes guys to recover. But the problem when you're a center is your wingers, often the tempo and the pace gets dictated by what you set down the middle. And so the first time everybody got a kind of chance, the new GM, the new head coach got a chance to see those guys, they didn't look as dominant as they did in the AHL going into the playoffs. Like, Marody was better than a point per game that year. And Benson was right around, I think he was the second highest scoring rookie in the league that year. So, you know, those guys, like, I think Tyler's got a chance. I think he, again, I personally believe he's smart enough to play. And it'll just, but there's going to need to be some things that go right for him to end up playing. But you mentioned, good point, he did get into games last year.
Yeah.
Well, last one for you is, tell me, I don't know anything about this guy. What about Devin Shore? Could he be a regular NHLer on this team or no?
Oh, he can be. Well, like, Brody, he was making $2.4 million for the last 3 years per year. He's a double-digit 30-point guy. Like, he is a guy that can move up and down your lineup. He's not an explosive skater. He's really smart, really competitive, and protects the puck well, and he can play center.
Is he a right shot?
I think he's a left shot off the top without looking at the guide. Yeah. I think he's a left shot, but he can play all three forward positions. I know a couple of years ago in Dallas, they lost a couple of their centers, and he ended up sliding in and playing like the back half of the season at center, and he was decent. Ken Hitchcock had him in Dallas, and are you looking it up right now? I'm pretty sure you'll find that he's a left shot. Is he a left shot?
Yeah. You're right again.
Yeah.
I'm never going to question. Yeah. Wasn't going to anyways, but yeah, no, yeah. He's a left shot.
He's a legitimate option. And it just shows you how this is one of the things that I think can work to Edmonton's advantage in the future. Like, there are teams that simply are not going to want to play. Like, in a normal, let's just say the cap goes to 87 or 88 million from 81.5. I believe somebody signed short 1.5 million on a 2-year deal. And instead, there was nothing there for him because everybody was tight with money. So we're at 81.5, and he falls. It's the same as Cahoon. Like, Cahoon probably thought, you know, hey, I got an arb case to my advantage. And I know Jerry Johansson ended up, Brody, Jerry ended up taking that file over and helping out Cahoon's check agent on that. And I'm sure those guys would have looked at the numbers and said, we're going to win the arb case here with Buffalo, and they're going to have to pay us, like, 2.7 to 3.3 million, and Buffalo didn't even qualify. Now, and just to show you how this works, like, Arizona a year ago, they didn't qualify Archibald and Cousins a year ago. Those guys were both pretty good pickups for decent teams. Yeah. So that happens sometimes because they know they're going to lose the arb case because the players put up competitive numbers. And so in Cahoon's case, the analytics guys love him. I know that Michael Rupp, we had him on Oilers Now. I don't know if you remember the interview, Josh, but he was pretty effusive in his praise for Cahoon, thinking that, oh, like, there's, you know, this is a guy that can probably, you know, in an 80-game sked, probably put up 45 points as a second-line wing. Maybe, and that's all 5-on-5. Like, he didn't get a lot of first-unit power play time. So I'll be intrigued to see how Cahoon does as well.
Yeah. You got anything more there, Brody, or?
No, I'm good, buddy.
Okay, so we'll do some Battle of Alberta here, Bob. I know, listening to Ryan Leslie talk today on some of the Calgary Flames media avails, he was really pushing his question on the nastiness that we might see in this series, and respectfully, Tree Living and Ward didn't really want to go down that road. So I guess I'm going to ask you, Bob, like, kind of still his question, but how, and you and I are, and I'm sure Brody's the same way, like, we like rough and tumble hockey and a good physical game to see. But how nasty do you think this rivalry is going to be? Because the Oilers have added some size even too. Adam Cracknell might be a guy that gets in some of those games too. But it's not like they need him, but they got some other guys that can do the damage.
Good question. They don't play Calgary till February.
Yeah.
That's going to give us the team that's added the most is Ottawa.
Yeah.
Like Josh Brown, I know we had George on the other day and he wanted to talk about Ryan Reeves being the toughest guy in the NHL and Lucic being the second toughest guy. Those are the 30-year-olds that are tough. There's 23 and 24 and 25-year-olds and Josh Brown is big time tough. And Ottawa brought him in.
You brought up Kermis McDermott too, and that's another guy that I like, but go on.
Sorry. Yeah, LA, like there's no way LA would trade Curtis McDermott.
No.
Okay. No way.
No. And with that they're gonna have too, right? So
well, who do you think looked after McDavid and Erie?
Yeah.
It was Curtis McDermott. Yeah. So like Ottawa's got Gabranson. They added obviously Brown. So two guys on defense. And then they got Austin Watson and Paquette. They added somebody else up front too that plays with a real edge. So
Haley? Ottawa's got, I think Michael Haley, was that the other?
Yeah. Did they bring him in?
I think they did, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I think he got,
okay.
He got a one-way 700K deal, yeah. Yeah.
Well, they got a tough team then. Montreal added competitive players. Like, I really like Edmondson. You know, he's like, you look at St. Louis, they won the cup by playing heavy hockey. Okay, so Jay had the heart issue, and that takes him out. And Jay wasn't a physical player, but Jay had Jay's got size, good stick, and he could defend. And so Jay played with Parayko, and then Edmondson basically was the defense with Pietrangelo. And now you look at only one of those guys is left in St. Louis, and all those guys were 6'3" and above. Like, I think if you're a smaller player, you can compete today. I still think you need size and defense. That's the one thing, which is why I'm really excited long-term about Broberg, Bouchard, and Sam Barukov, because I think you're going to need that. You're going to need that reach and that length, like that length on the back end of it. I'm not saying they have to be killers the way Brown and Gabranson are, and maybe you only need one of Brown or Gabranson. But I think you're asking me a question here. Do the Oilers have enough toughness? Yeah. And I'd say they have enough toughness to start. And if it becomes an issue, maybe you need to address it during the year. Trey Living, as you guys know, wasn't a shy away type guy as a player himself growing up. He's always had that in their lineup. I know that in 16, 17, and 17, 18, people in Calgary used to tell me that there may have been some intimidation with playing against the Oilers. The Flames now had the Flames have got, they've got Luch, they've got Bennett, who's a really competitive player. I'm missing a couple other guys, but they're not a small team. They've got some Kachucks, obviously.
Answered the bell as of late, right? I guess you could say.
Oh, not just that. He's got, like, Josh, he's gone looking for it. He set the tone.
Yeah.
Like, he went after Blake Wheeler in the first shift of the play-in series against Winnipeg. Like, the first shift, he challenged Wheeler to a fight.
Yeah.
He's going to be, that's the other one is Brady Kachuk in Ottawa. Brady's bigger than Matthew Kachuk.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think Ottawa and Calgary are going to be tough to play against. I think that Toronto added some older experience like Thornton and Simmons. Those guys know how to handle themselves because they come from a time when you had to do that more. And I guess my response to the Oilers is between Nurse, Cassian, who's somewhat unpredictable, which works to his advantage. And I think there's an opportunity in the short term here for Kara to reestablish himself. He's got to play with a little bit more edge too. I think that the Oilers probably have enough, but the biggest thing is the other guys have to compete too, right? Like Bear sticking up for himself against Kachuk, Yamamoto being a honey badger out on the ice and getting inside guys' equipment on the ice and winning puck battles. Like, that's the sort of thing that has to happen for Edmonton.
Yeah. All right. We'll finish up with this last question on the PTO for Travis Hamonic going to Vancouver. I know that you kind of have a soft spot for these guys that do a lot in the community and giving back and doing the right thing. And he doesn't even want the PR, the great PR about it, but thoughts on him going to Vancouver on a PTO and what that means for that group.
Well, first of all, he's a legitimate defensive defenseman. So, and he's got character. I think his preference all along, in fact, it was you who told me he wanted to play in Western Canada, no matter what. I think I've only interviewed him once, maybe when he was in the island, and that was several years ago. I know that Johnny Boychuk, he speaks, I think, pretty highly of him from their time together in New York with the Islanders. And so I don't see how Hamonic can hurt them. I think he will make their team. I mean, they got Nate Schmidt.
Yeah.
Right? And they still have Edler. Obviously, they have Quinn Hughes. Like, I don't think Vancouver's as good in goal. I don't see how they could be in good. I'm sorry. I know Jerry Johansson's got Holtby. Maybe Holtby's going to turn around and, you know, shove it up. You know what? For everybody that's down against him right now and saying that he's not the same guy he was 3 or 4 years ago. It's interesting with Markstrom. Like, his save percentage was, I think, 918, and Koskinen's was 917. And everybody in Calgary is talking about how he's infinitely better than the goalies in Edmonton. And I'm like, they had the same save percentage last year between those two guys. Now, somebody can show me some advanced stats that Vancouver gave up higher caliber scoring opportunities. I'll buy that if they've got that information. But I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Markstrom in Calgary.
Yeah.
I think Holtby, like, I bet on guys to bounce back because I believe in personalities. Like, I'm betting on Turris to bounce back at Edmonton. I'm betting on Puljujärvi to be much better because those guys have got something to prove. And sometimes the pressure, like Lucic put pressure on himself at Edmonton to produce. And that became problematic once he got moved off the line with McDavid and Maroon replaced him. Now, in fairness to Lucic, the final 10 games of the 16-17 season, his first year here, he, Nugent, Hopkins, and Eberle were a really good line at that time. But it didn't manifest in the playoffs. They couldn't sustain it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, I just think I'm like, it's funny. I look at Schmidt, and he got dumped to Vancouver.
Yeah.
I think that's going to work to Vancouver's advantage. I'm not sure Holtby's the same goalie that he was, but I think he's going to play with some fire. I think Hamonic having to go in on a PTO, I think that'll work to Vancouver's advantage as well. And so, with the two guys from Calgary, Tanev and Markstrom going over from the Canucks, respect both players. But I think there'd be a different pressure on those guys going into Calgary. I mean, we all know who Tanev's replacing. He's now in Toronto.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Right? And that guy, and Brody was a big part of that team in Calgary. So, I don't know. I'm going to be intrigued. I like the short-term bets on guys bouncing back. And sometimes I think when you sign guys long-term, it's hard for those players to live up to those contracts.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the rule of thumb, right? I think the guys like, you know, Leon and Connor and, you know, Matthews and, you know, those kind of guys should get the big deals. I think, you know, these other guys, the wheelhouse should be maybe 3 or 4 or like 4 years, maybe 5, but you know, that's a topic for another day anyways, but it will be interesting to see. I'm like you said, with Louie and those guys on Thursday, let's go, right? So let's
go.
Yeah.
Get it going.
Yeah, exactly.
So drop the puck.
Yeah, exactly. So we, again, appreciate you coming on, Bob. This was always great for you to take your time to join us. We appreciate it.
For sure. Brody, Josh, you guys take care.
Take care.